So, as many of you know, on March 16th, 2023, I broke both of my feet walking the Camino de Santiago pilgrimage alone in Portugal. So it was particularly poignant when I found myself back on the Camino this March 16th, exactly 3 years to the day, but now in France. You can make your way to Santiago de Compostela along many different routes through France, Portugal, Spain, Germany, and beyond. There are paths coming from all over that lead to Santiago. So this time I was walking just a portion of the Camino from Eaux to Nogaro in southwest France as part of a meditation retreat. I was supposed to walk with a friend, but she wasn't feeling well. So just as it happened 3 years earlier, when my Camino companion had to drop out at the last minute, I once again found myself on this journey all alone. And needless to say, I can even feel it now, I was anxious. There's the Camino sign that you follow on the path. And I can't fully describe how charged that day felt for me. My body remembered. Every ache in my feet made me nervous. Every uneven stone caught my attention. Because our bodies carry memory even when our minds try to move on. Thankfully, this time I was well equipped with walking poles and ankle boots. But I still found myself hyper aware of my body, of my age, my vulnerability, and the possibility that things could once again go wrong, and I was alone on the path. So that morning, as I began walking, I was tentative, careful, and afraid. And this was a beautiful stretch of the path where a photographer had taken pictures of pilgrims and put them along the side of the path. There was also something deeply meaningful about returning to the Camino that day, putting one foot in front of the other again on that ancient path. But every descent made me nervous, so I walked gingerly. By the end of the day, when I finally marched triumphantly through a beautiful Napoleonic alley of trees into Nogaro, I felt gratitude and relief washing over me. Gratitude not simply for surviving the walk, but for having the courage to do it again and alone. And I realized something important. Pilgrimage isn't really about athletic achievement or even reaching a destination. Pilgrimage is about the journey itself and allowing ourselves to be changed by it. Now, at some point during these months of travel, I began to wonder whether pilgrimage actually answers a deep human need that we no longer fully honor in modern life. For most of human history, human beings have created intentional journeys towards what they considered sacred. They left home, they walked great distances, they fasted, they prayed, reflected, endured discomfort, gathered with strangers and sought healing, forgiveness, meaning, or an encounter with the holy. Pilgrimage existed in Christianity, in Islam, in Hinduism, in Buddhism, in indigenous traditions, and countless ancient spiritual cultures. And I think that's because human beings have always longed for more than just survival, getting through this life. We long to feel connected to something larger than ourselves, don't we? We long to step outside our ordinary routines for enough time to remember what truly matters. And we long for moments that interrupt the trance of everyday life and wake us up to our real meaning and purpose in life. Which makes me wonder what happens to societies like ours when we lose or ignore the meaningful ritual of pilgrimage. The hunger to transcend daily life doesn't disappear. The longing for meaning remains. But often now we channel that longing elsewhere, don't we? Into achievement, into productivity, into constant motion and scrolling on our devices, into the endless pursuit of more. We become busy beyond measure, yet spiritually unfulfilled. And I think this might be why so many people today feel exhausted in ways that sleep alone can't cure. Anyone here feel that way? I think the soul grows weary when it loses touch with reverence, with mystery, with silence, and purpose. So part of my goal this sabbatical was to reclaim soul-stirring experiences. And one of the ways I did that was to visit pilgrimage sites across Europe to understand more deeply what draws people there, and perhaps glean some of my own lessons from pilgrimage. So each place that I visited revealed something different to me about what pilgrimage means. In Fatima, Portugal, I encountered pilgrimage as devotion. Fatima is one of the most significant Catholic pilgrimage sites in the world, where three shepherd children reported visions of the Virgin Mary in 1917. And although adults were skeptical about these visions at first, repeated sightings turned this little shepherd village into a huge pilgrimage site. And tens of thousands of people gather there each year to honor the Virgin Mary and pray for healing, forgiveness, miracles, and hope. And what struck me most deeply was not the grand basilica you see there and the gigantic plaza itself, but the people. I watched pilgrims crossing the enormous square on their knees, slowly, painfully, prayerfully. Some were elderly, some were weeping, some were carrying photographs of loved ones, some moved with visible suffering, but they were devoted. And then there were giant candles being lit as prayers and burned together, melted down into enormous vats of wax to be recycled again. Others reverently kissed the knees of a baby Jesus doll beneath towering statues of Christ on the cross. It was curious, earnest, and honestly, part of me didn't entirely know what to do with these intense rituals and devotion. And yet standing there, witnessing human vulnerability and longing laid bare, I felt enormous compassion. Because underneath all theology lies something profoundly human, I think, something that many of us have in common. We yearn for meaning. We yearn for healing and understanding. We yearn to believe that our lives matter in some way. And we yearn to know that we are not alone. And pilgrimage, I realized, often begins with that kind of longing. But Fatima also reminded me that human beings need devotional practices. Not necessarily rigid dogma or set rituals, but devotion itself. I think it's part of opening our hearts and learning to love, the willingness to orient ourselves towards something that we consider sacred in life. Because every human life, my friends, eventually becomes devoted to something. Career, family, status, beauty, loved ones, achievement, politics, money, busyness, comfort, or control, right? So the question is not whether we will devote ourselves. The question is what we will choose to serve. And perhaps pilgrimage is one of the ancient ways that human beings can intentionally realign themselves towards what matters most. When I arrived in Avila, Spain, a few weeks later, pilgrimage became something else entirely for me. Avila is the home of Saint Teresa of Avila, the great mystic and reformer whose writings about prayer and the inner life transformed Christian mysticism. I'd long been intrigued by her and traveled there carrying deep questions about my life and the mystery of this existence, and I secretly hoped I would get clear answers. Oh yeah, you know what's coming, don't you? Maybe I might even get some great mystical download, or a voice would speak to me, perhaps even some clear sign. And instead, I found silence and snow. Lots of snow. Who thought there would be snow in Spain in January? I walked through freezing streets and sat reverently before the tomb of Saint Teresa, expecting inspiration, revelation, and answers. Alone in her chapel, I prayed. Go ahead to the next slide, please. That was her chapel. It was beautiful, and I sat there for hours and prayed reverently before the tomb of Saint Teresa, expecting inspiration, revelation, and I gazed at her index finger in a golden case. Because those of you who are Catholics know that Catholics love relics in these holy places. Show the next slide, because that's the index finger. There we go. But honestly, nothing came. And I mostly felt frustrated, let down, cold, and deeply human. Where were the answers, the clarity that I journeyed across the world to find? But of course, that too became part of the pilgrimage. Because I learned that pilgrimage is not transactional spirituality. We don't just arrive at sacred places and receive instant, easy answers in return. I think that some of us secretly approach spirituality hoping that if we seek sincerely and earnestly enough, that life will finally become clear. Anyone here think that? That we'll hear voices on demand, or that God or the universe will answer our prayers easily and clearly. Boy, did I learn that wasn't the case. And pilgrimage taught me something harder and perhaps more important, that answers don't necessarily come in the way we expect them, if at all. And often they're actually within us all along. So instead, we need to trust and walk faithfully, even without certainty. Sometimes pilgrimage simply calls us to remain present and keep going even when clarity doesn't come. And sometimes the invitation is simply to live the questions themselves and wait for your own inner wisdom to arise. I think we can turn off the AC now before everyone freezes. It's reminding me of Avila. And my juice cleanse. Anyway, interestingly enough, while I was in Avila, I began having vivid prophetic dreams, which gave me some answers in forms I had least expected, so you never know. A few weeks later in England, I visited the retreat center of Evelyn Underhill in Pleshey. Underhill was a great Anglican mystic and spiritual writer whose theology I had admired for a while. I imagined I might feel deeply connected to her there. I should have learned from Avila. Surrounded by sprawling fields, staying in the retreat house where she had lived, developed her work, and so many clergy had come before me. But instead, I found myself strangely disconnected from much of the language. The heavily Christian framing of the spiritual leaders there no longer really resonated with me. And hearing God described exclusively in male terms, and Jesus spoken of as the singular Savior with such certainty, created distance for me rather than connection. And that surprised me. And then I remembered pilgrimage is rarely about comfort. Sometimes it reveals who we are now rather than who we once were, through friction and discomfort. And oddly, that realization gave me more empathy for the people who walk through our own doors of our own congregation, carrying hesitation about religious language. I really got it. Sometimes pilgrimage gently clarifies what no longer fits, what no longer feels authentic, and how we ourselves might have evolved. And sometimes we need to translate life's teachings and others' words from convention into a language that works for us, which awakens freedom and flexibility. And my final morning in Pleshi, it was a very meaningful day. I walked out into incredible sunrise that marked a new dawn for me, a dawn of freedom, hope, and infinite possibility. Can you show the other slide, please? Later in my trip came Saint-Baume in southern France, which was another profound experience. Saint-Baume is believed to be the place where Mary Magdalene spent the last 30 years of her life after Jesus' death, in contemplation inside a cave hidden high within a dramatic cliffside. You can see the cliff there, and halfway up is the cave. And at the very top, you see a tiny little point of another chapel at the top and an ancient prehistoric forest in between. To reach it, you climb through this ancient forest unlike any I had ever experienced. Towering trees, moss-covered stones, birdsong echoing through deep silence. And some say it's one of the oldest preserved forests in Europe, dating from the Ice Age. It's never burned. And as I climbed up the steep path to the cave, which you see there, and breathed deeply, everything in me slowed down. In fact, the journey itself invited slowness. It called for reverence and contemplation and attention. And then once inside the cave, I was alone for nearly 30 minutes before others arrived for the daily mass. And water dripped steadily from the ceiling down the ancient stone walls into vats like that, and also all over the seats. And there were memorials to unborn children. If you could show the next slide. Actually, that's the relics, sorry. There's the memorial to the unborn children, the names of unborn children. And then, of course, the required relic, this time of Mary Magdalene's supposed scapula. Candles flickered softly, and there was silence, profound silence. Silence shaped by centuries of pilgrims who climbed the mountain searching for an encounter with the holy, for solace, for forgiveness, or awakening. After Mass in the cave, where I got to do a lot more translating, I climbed even higher to that tiny little chapel perched above the cave on top of the mountain. And there were panoramic views which stretched across the south of France in all directions towards Marseille. And below, strangely enough, on the other side of the mountain, engines roared from a nearby Formula One racetrack. And at first, the contrast felt absurd. You know, the contemplative mountain on one side, and then the speeding racetrack below. a great metaphor for how the noise of life continues even on retreat or while we try to have silence. And then I remembered that the remote juice cleanse that I'd attended in Portugal also had a loud racetrack nearby in Portimão, as did the meditation retreat in France, in Nogaro, where I walked the Camino. I mean, three racetracks during three retreats that I heard constantly during the silence? I thought there must be some greater message there. And then I realized that it felt like a metaphor for modern life itself. Many of us, myself included, move through life as though speed were some kind of measure of meaning and success. Faster responses, faster achievement, faster growth, faster everything until we either drop of exhaustion, we get sick, or we die, right? Amen. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. Yet almost every sacred tradition, my friends, teaches us the opposite. Love takes time. Wisdom takes time. Healing takes time, doesn't it, Jill? Transformation takes time. The Ice Age forest knew this. The ancient cave knew this. Pilgrimage knows this. You don't get there fast. So perhaps part of what we learn as pilgrims isn't simply to get to a destination quickly, but to slow down into a different, more mindful rhythm of being alive. Anyone like to try that? Equally meaningful was what happened afterward at the Hostellerie de Saint-Baume, where pilgrims from around the world gathered for meals and accommodation hosted by Dominican monks. And at dinner, we shared stories with strangers from different countries, backgrounds, and traditions, all of us somehow drawn to this sacred mountain. Many were Catholic, some were spiritual but not religious, some were grieving, some searching, and others simply curious. And I remember understanding pilgrimage is both deeply personal and profoundly communal. We each walk our own path through life, but we do not walk alone. There's something beautiful that happens when human beings gather not around consumption or achievement, but around shared searching and meaning, just like we do here at Chalice. We're on this pilgrimage of life together, my friends. A few weeks later, I arrived in Vézelay in Burgundy, another starting point for the Camino de Santiago and another place associated with Mary Magdalene. Vézelay became famous because it, too, has some supposed relics of Mary's body. So it has long been a gathering place for pilgrims. And what struck me there was the light. The basilica was bathed in it. Soft white light pouring across ancient stone. No stained glass, just pure light. It was transcendent. And standing there, I thought about the thousands of human beings across centuries who'd stood in that same place, preparing to begin journeys whose outcomes they couldn't know. Perhaps allowing themselves to be guided by the light. Of course, none of us truly knows where we're going in life, do we? Or what's going to happen. We simply begin. And then life unfolds. But looking for a guiding light or shining values to lead us as we do in our faith helps us in the way we respond to life and shapes who we become. And Vézelay's light will remain with me always as an inspiration. Finally, my friends, there was Chartres Cathedral. Many of you know it. For more than 800 years, pilgrims have journeyed there, drawn by its beauty, mystery, and spiritual power. But in the early 13th century, Chartres became one of the great pilgrimage destinations of medieval Europe and another place where the Camino de Santiago begins. Embedded, yeah, there you can see it's 1,625 kilometers to Santiago. Embedded into the cathedral floor, underneath chairs most of the week, lies the famous labyrinth, created around the year 1200. And it is only revealed on Friday mornings. It's covered by chairs the rest of the time. And unlike a maze designed to confuse, the Chartres labyrinth offers a single winding path towards the center. Medieval pilgrims walked it prayerfully as a symbolic pilgrimage to Jerusalem, when war, poverty, illness, or danger made the actual journey impossible. The path stretches almost 700 feet, though it occupies only the cathedral floor. And standing there, I was struck by how profoundly medieval people understood the spiritual life, because the labyrinth refuses the illusion that transformation happens in straight lines. The path doubles back, turns unexpectedly, brings you close to the center only to carry you all the way out to the edge again. And at moments you feel certain, and then other times you feel lost, and at moments frustrated by how long it all takes, and worried that the others walking it, there were many of us walking it, may derail you. And yet if you remain on the path, it slowly carries you toward the center, to your destination nonetheless. And I walked the winding labyrinth, reflecting and giving thanks for this life. None of us moves through life cleanly or directly. We circle through grief and joy, through certainty and doubt, through loss and renewal, through love and heartbreak, through clear identity and then reinvention. So many twists and turns, and still the path continues to unfold underneath our feet. And perhaps this is one of the reasons Unitarian Universalism matters in this moment in history particularly. Because I think ours is one of the few religious traditions spacious enough to honor many paths while still insisting that the spiritual journey itself matters. We don't have to agree on the theology of the way we walk beside one another. Some of us believe in God, others never would. Some encounter the sacred through prayer, others through justice, through music, through silence, through nature, through children, through beauty, or love. Yet beneath all our differences lies a shared human longing to live meaningful lives, to put love into action, to grow in our compassion, and to remain open to mystery, and to walk through this fragile human existence with courage, curiosity, and kindness. Pilgrimage reminds us that the spiritual life is not primarily about arriving at perfect answers or beliefs. Instead, it is about becoming and transforming, becoming more honest, more loving, more alive, more connected, and more capable of wonder. So, my friends, I invite us, as our spiritual practice, to become pilgrims again. Not necessarily by traveling across Europe or climbing mountains to ancient caves. You don't need it. But by incorporating these lessons. Find something to devote yourself to that truly matters in your life. listen for and trust that the answers will come, maybe just not in a way that you expect them to. Be prepared to translate life's teachings into a language that works for you. Slow down. Pay attention and breathe in the mystery of each moment. Find and follow your guiding light or values. And know that life will be a winding path with many twists and turns, but it's a beautiful journey we're on together. Enjoy it. My beloveds, may we treat this life itself as sacred ground, as a sacred pilgrimage. And may we walk it with courage, curiosity, and may we journey with wonder and love, and may we help one another find our way home. May it be so.